We have been in a sermon series over the last number of weeks called From A to Z, moving from apathy to zeal. And you may have found yourself wondering, does this apply to me? How would I know if it applied to me? Do I have a problem with apathy? So to help you out, I've got an apathy evaluation scale for you this morning. Now, if we were going to sit down, there would be probably like 20 questions, and there would be a ranking scale, 1 to 4, and you'd sort of rank the intensity of your answer. So we're not going to be that formal this morning, so you can just kind of listen and think to yourself how you might answer these questions. So if I were to ask you, is it important to you to start things on your own, to show initiative? To see things through to the end? Is it important to you to accomplish tasks during the day? Is it important to you to get together regularly with friends? You can sort of score yourself on the continuum, and if the answer is yes, then you know, apathy might not be a problem for you. If the answer is no or I'm not sure, then maybe. How about this? Do you spend time doing things that you enjoy, that interest you? Do you enjoy and seek out new experiences? Do you like to learn new things? And again, if you kind of rank yourself, you might be able to sort out, am I apathetic or not? When something good happens, do you get excited about that? Do you feel that inner excitement? Do you have motivation and initiative? Again, based on how you answer those questions, you might be able to assess. So where are you? Are you motivated, enthusiastic, ready to go? A little hard to be enthusiastic maybe on a day like this, but you know, generally speaking, how are you? Are you more kind of up and down, ho-hum? Do you find yourself feeling kind of low? Now, it's important to acknowledge, and I wanted to make sure to say this at some point in the series. Sometimes we might have apathy as a symptom of something else, and in particular, as a symptom of depression. That can be one of the symptoms. And I would suggest to you that if that's the case, then if you want to address the apathy, you need to address the depression. I mean, depression is a mental health diagnosis, and we have to take it seriously. And sometimes in addressing that specifically, that will help to address the apathy. But it is also possible to be apathetic apart from being depressed. It's also possible that you might find yourself apathetic in specific areas of your life. And you would say to yourself, you know I should care about those things. I want to care more about those things. I want to be passionate, fervent, zealous for those things, but I'm not where I'd want to be. And so if you find yourself apathetic apart from a clinical depression, or if you find yourself apathetic in a particular area of your life, that's what we're trying to talk about in this series this morning. Well, today I want to address maybe an obstacle or a counter that you would offer to me as we talk about this subject of apathy, and that isn't apathy a feeling? I mean, so what do we do about feelings? I mean, aren't feelings just that? They're feelings. I mean, they just are. And not like we can just flip a switch and turn those feelings off. So you could hear these sermons, and you could think that the advice that we're giving you throughout the series is a little bit like Dr. Switzer's advice. Do some of you know Dr. Switzer? Let me clue you in. Dr. Switzer is actually Bob Newhart, the actor, in a kind of now classic Mad TV sketch. And in that sketch, Dr. Switzer's solution to every mental and emotional problem is the same. His solution to whatever your problem is stop it. That's it. Just Just stop it. And you can go and you can do a search and you'll be able to find that clip. It's all over the place. And maybe you think to yourself, well, some people probably need to hear just, you know, you're overcomplicating things. Just stop it. But that's not the solution necessarily that we're promoting in this series. I'd like to make the case to you this morning that we can change, even at the level of feelings, even at the level of desires and affections, that we can change those things. And even something like apathy, we can change it. And I believe Paul would agree with that, even at the level of emotions and affections. So Pastor Amanda read to us from Colossians chapter 3 a few minutes ago, and I'd encourage you to have that open. We'll be referring to it as we go along through the sermon this morning. Paul is writing this letter in the first century to Christians in the town of Colossae. And in this particular stretch of the letter that was read for us, Paul is clear about the kinds of change that he thinks are possible. So in verse 5 and following, he says, "Put to death whatever belongs to your earthly nature." That seems like something Paul thinks you can change. Put these things to death, he says. And then he goes on, and you notice that some of the things that he names are feelings, are desires, are affections. Put to death things like lust, evil desires, anger, rage, malice. And I mean, that's just a part of the list. He goes on, but all of those things are really more feelings. Now, they have outward manifestations for sure, but they're feelings, they're desires. And he says, you can put those to death. You can change those things in you. So he talks about putting to death. That's one analogy. He also uses this other analogy where he says, take these things off. Kind of like a dirty set of clothes. It says, take them off. They're part of the old self, verse 9, that he talks about. Those things are part of the old self. You've put on, verse 10, the new self. Now, some of you may have noticed this morning that I am wearing atypical footwear for a Sunday morning. I saw a couple like downward glances in the lobby, and you know, you're all much too polite to say anything about that, aren't you? But these are my mowing shoes. So they were running sneakers at one time, and now they're my yard work shoes. They're, at this stage in the game, they're really not much good for anything but yard work. So Paul says the dirty things, take off. You know, take off. You don't need those anymore. Does this look better to some of you? Put on the new. Verse 12, he says, put on things like compassion. He says, clothe yourselves with compassion, with kindness, with gentleness, patience, forbearance, forgiveness, and ultimately the one that ties them all together, kind of like a belt pulling it all together, with love. Put those things on. Now again, as you look at that list, those things really start as feelings. If you were to read the original language, and our New International Version that we read from kind of doesn't spell this out, but the original language says, clothe yourselves with bowels of compassion and kindness, you know, with your guts. I mean, that's kind of an ancient way of talking about, you know, we talk sometimes about having a gut feeling. It's feelings. It's the inner self. We might say, clothe yourself with a heart. Doesn't that sound nicer? With a heart of compassion and kindness and humility. But it's talking about feelings. Now, again, those feelings work themselves out, but they're feelings. It says, clothe yourselves with those. Now, it's possible that Paul, who was a devout Jew, would have had in mind the garments that Jewish priests would have worn. And you and I wouldn't necessarily notice that as we read, but in verse 12, he calls the Christians God's chosen people. That's language you can go all the way back, way back, second book of the Bible to Exodus. That's language that is used specifically for the Jews, for the people of Israel. They are God's chosen people. And there's this interesting verse in Exodus 34. So this is in the midst of the Israelite people. They've come out of slavery in Egypt there at Mount Sinai. Moses, their leader, is up on the mountain, and he encounters God there. And in Exodus 34, incidentally, verses 5 to 7, Exodus 34, are the most quoted verses elsewhere in the Bible. So these are the Bible verses that are most quoted by the Bible in other places. Exodus 34, and there it says that God came to Moses and he proclaimed his name to Moses. The Lord, the Lord, compassionate, gracious, slow to anger, abounding in love and faithfulness, maintaining love to thousands, forgiving wickedness. And you see some overlap between this list here in Exodus 34 from centuries before Paul, and then Paul's list of what we're to clothe ourselves with: compassion, forbearance, love. Well, the priests were literally supposed to have a gold plate that they would affix to their turbans with God's name inscribed on it. So the priests literally were bearing this name of God as he revealed it to Moses for the people. Author Sky Jatani says this: like the priests who literally clothed themselves with God's name in the Old Testament, we are now instructed to clothe ourselves with God's name in the New Testament. But this no longer involves turbans and breast pieces. These were the mere shadows of a deeper reality that has now been revealed in Jesus. As God's people, those who have been redeemed by Jesus Christ and called by his name, we are to bear his name with our lives by clothing ourselves with his character. So is it that easy? I mean, is it just like taking off your yard shoes and putting on another pair, and that's how we bear God's name? That's how we change? How we move from apathy to zeal? Well, I'd suggest to you, of course, it's not that quick and easy. And yet I would say to you, if we are going to change, if we are going to move from apathy to zeal, then it must be possible. Then it must be possible to change, even at the level of our feelings and our desires and our affections over time. Author Uche Anazor says this: we're apathetic because our hearts are alive to things that don't matter and numb to things that do. Our loves are disordered. We need a reawakening of love for the right things. We need to cultivate affection. So in other words, we need to do something that will help us to change our feelings, our desires, our affections. Here's my suggestion to you. Our goal should not be just to stop the things we don't want to feel. My suggestion to you is we need to replace those things. We need to replace those affections with better ones. 19th century Scottish preacher Thomas Chalmers, maybe related to Alice Chalmers, the tractor company, I'm not sure. Thomas Chalmers talked about the expulsive power of a new affection. In other words, if you have a new affection, it can expel an old one. You can replace one with the other. You know, in Paul's letters, it's really fascinating. Throughout his letters to churches, in numbers of places, and Colossians 3 is one of them, he has lists of vices. You know, lists of things to put to death. List, you know, get rid of these things. Take them off. Like your yard shoes. Get rid of them. But so often when he has a list of things to get rid of, there's a list of things to add to replace them. Galatians 5, Ephesians 4 and 5, 2 Timothy 2, Titus 1. All places where, you know, get rid of this stuff and take these things instead. Replace one with the other. And so I would make the case to you that we can take our selective apathy and we can replace it with stronger affection. And ultimately, I would make the case we can replace it with affection for Jesus Christ. Now, if you're still wondering, I mean, is that really possible? Can we really change how we feel? Can we really change what we want? I would simply hold up this example. If you are married, do you love your spouse more or less today than you did the day you were married? Now, don't answer that out loud. Think about it in your mind. But I suspect that many of you would say that the intensity of what you feel for your spouse, the passion, the zeal that you have for your spouse today is not the same as it was years ago. I mean, I suspect many of us have heard someone say, you know, one spouse say to another, I love you more today than I did the day that we were married. And I also suspect that many of us, or all of us, know of couples where that's not the case. Where, I mean, we would say they grew apart. They're not as close as they once were. They fell out of love. Whatever language you would use. Affections can increase and decrease. And it's not just in marriage. I mean, we could talk about friendships where people were closer and then they're not as close over time. We could even talk about our children and our affection for them. There are ways that affection can grow and decrease. And we can do things that will contribute to that happening. So let me suggest to you two general ideas and then three practical things that you can do. Here's kind of the first general idea that I'd offer to you. If we want to change our affections, that can come through imitation. It can come through imitation. In other words, you look for people who have the kind of desires and affections that you wish you had or wish you had more of. You look for those people and you say, why do they have those? And then you look at what they do in their lives and you imitate some of those things. Now, we live in a time and a place, don't we, where imitation seems like a bad thing, doesn't it? I mean, you do you. Now, be authentic. Be different. Out with the old, in with the new and the novel. And that's much more the way our culture rolls these days. And so why would we want to imitate? I mean, doesn't imitation mean fake? If you do a Google search and you just type in imitation, and you know, Google does like the auto fill-in thing, a couple of the top choices are imitation crab and imitation jewelry. So, I mean, it's not the real deal, it's the fake stuff. So why would we want to imitate? Well, New Testament writers seem to think that imitation, if you're imitating the right person, is a good thing. Paul writes in one of his letters, follow me and my example as I follow Christ. He writes, be imitators of God, therefore. Imitation can be a very good thing. I mean, we all likely have heard that old saying, you know, that Lessons are caught more than they're taught. I mean, kids learn by imitating. Well, what about authenticity? I mean, if I'm imitating someone else, then doesn't that mean that I'm a hypocrite? That I'm not being true to myself? That I'm actually being a fake? C.S. Lewis, in his classic book, Mere Christianity, said something about this. He said, "What is the good of pretending to be what you are not? Well, even on the human level, you know, there are two kinds of pretending. There is a bad kind where the pretense is there instead of the real thing, as when a man pretends he is going to help you instead of really helping you. But there is also a good kind where the pretense leads up to the real thing. Very often, the only way to get equality in reality is to start behaving as if you had it already." Now, interesting story that I experienced a number of years ago. I knew a couple where the husband had been an avowed atheist for all of his life. Didn't grow up in a religious family, was a strident atheist. And then through a set of circumstances, he came to faith in Christ. And he started to attend the church that I was pastoring at the time. His wife was also not a Christian. She had had some Christian upbringing, but had religious baggage from kind of a legalistic, difficult childhood. And so she was not a Christian, was not interested in faith, but now she has this husband who's had this dramatic change, and suddenly he's going to church and doing all this Christian stuff. And so she decides to tag along. I suspect that she was tagging along because she felt like she needed to keep tabs on him and make sure he didn't totally go off the deep end. So she comes to church with him. She hangs out with Christian people that he's hanging out with. She even becomes part of a growth group, like a small group of people. And I mean, she really doesn't believe the same as her husband or anybody else in the group, but she's coming faithfully. And you know where the story's going, don't you? She was imitating a Christian until eventually she was one, where she put her own faith in Jesus. As we imitate others, it doesn't necessarily just change our behavior, but over time, it can change our desires and our affections. So change can come through imitation. Change can also come through repetition. This really just flows out of the last point. You and I know that there are some areas of life where if we want to grow, then we have to practice. There has to be repetition. You know, if you want to get better at throwing the basketball through the hoop more often than you miss, it takes practice, it takes repetition. If you want to learn to play a musical instrument, if you want to learn to drive a car, I mean, pick any number of examples in our lives. You practice, and with many of these things, you've got to practice until you can do it automatically, until you can do it without thinking. By one estimate, only about 5% of what you and I do in a day's time is something that we do with conscious thought. I can't verify that, so trust me, I'm an expert. And so if we're going to take certain things that we cannot do automatically now, and we're going to turn them into habits, we're going to start to do them, by one measurement, it takes 66 days for that to happen. Now, some of you have probably heard the old, like, 21 days, and I think it's probably more like 66, or somewhere in the middle. But it takes a while of consistent behavior to be able to turn something into an automatic habit. Well, I'd suggest to you that we can also change our affections through practice, through repetition. If we can change our physical abilities that way, why not also change our desires? Author James Smith says, rhythms and routines and rituals enacted over and over again implant in you a disposition that becomes a character trait. It is learned and acquired like moral muscles that are trained in the same way our biological muscles are. So, Colossians 3, those qualities in 12 to 14. If we act like we have those qualities and do what people with those qualities do, and we continue to do it consistently, repeatedly, over time, I'd suggest to you what can often happen is those things eventually get woven into who we are. They become part of our character. And so then it gets to the place where, you know, our natural response becomes those things rather than whatever our natural response would be otherwise. So what can we do practically? If you want to, like, take this practical, here's three suggestions for you. Here's the first. Just do what Jesus and his disciples did. Do what Jesus and his disciples did. So, of course, that presupposes that you have read and you know what Jesus and his disciples did. And certainly some things that they did were unique to them in their calling, but there's also plenty of things that they said and did that are for us to do as well. Now, our theme this year is go and do likewise. So let's start with what Jesus and his disciples did, and let's imitate and repeat. Secondly, rethink your rituals. Rethink your rituals. And you say, well, I don't have rituals. I'm not into rituals. Well, what time do you get up in the morning? What do you do when you get up in the morning? I mean, what does your day look like? I suspect at a very granular level, for most of us, we have a lot of consistency to our day. Back to that number again, 5% or so of what we do with conscious thought, which means that 95% of the stuff we just do, and I suspect many of us go through our day just doing the next natural thing. Those things become rituals. A ritual is really just a series of actions that you continue to take repeatedly. So I'd encourage you to take a fresh look at your rituals and to think about how those rituals are affecting your affections. How are the people that you're imitating and the practices that you're repeating, how are they shaping you? Because I would contend they are shaping you. They are training you not only to do certain things without thinking, but to want certain things. What are your rituals training you to want? I think I probably shared this in a previous sermon. For Lent this year, I severely cut back on my consumption of news media and Facebook. So through the 40 days up to Easter, paid very little attention to the news, only went on Facebook if there was something I needed to respond to, but didn't like scroll the feed, didn't do any of that stuff. Well, then Easter comes, and if you know the Lent thing, then you know that when Easter comes, hey, you're free now to do the things that you did before. And you know what I found? I really didn't miss it. I don't really want to go back to reading the news all the time. I don't really want to go back to scrolling the feed and learning things about people that I didn't really want to know. My desires had changed. I encourage you to think about what are the habits and the rhythms and the routines of your life causing you to want, and make sure that they're things that you want to want. And if not, imitate and repeat other things that will help you to love what you want. My last suggestion for you as we wind down. And this goes back to what I said earlier about if you want to change, if you wonder if we can change your desires, think about your relationships, think about marriage, think about friendship and the ways that affections can change in those relationships. Well, I'd like to suggest to you that the ways that we can change our affections for a spouse or friend or children are the same ways that we might be able to change our affections for God. There's a book that's been around just about forever now called The Five Love Languages. And some of you, I'm sure, are familiar with it. And the article's contention is that there are basically five ways that one person says, I love you, to another. So, quickly, words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, giving gifts, physical touch are the five. And the author says we all have one or two that really rise to the surface for us, kind of our favorites. And so if people are going to communicate their love to us, the best way to communicate it is with those one or two things that are our top ones, and vice versa. If we want to say I love you to someone else, then we best use their favorite language so that they hear what we're trying to say. And what happens when you speak each other's languages is affection grows. And so my encouragement to you would be to explore those love languages with God. Explore them with Him. Consider, how does God speak words of affirmation to you? How does He want to spend quality time with you? How does He serve you? What gifts has He given and does He give you? In what ways could you feel His touch? And if we pay attention to those things, because I think there are ways we can pay attention to those things, even from a God we can't see, then chances are our affection for Him will grow. And we can also do those same things back to Him. We can offer Him words of affirmation. We can serve Him. We can give gifts to honor Him, and so on. And certainly that doesn't increase His affection for us because He's already crazy about us. But as we do those things for Him, we might find it's increasing our affection for Him as well. If you feel apathetic in some area of your life, I'd like to offer you hope that it can change, that you can take steps to change it, to shift feelings and desires and affection over time, that you can actually grow in love for things that will move you from A to Z, that you can imitate and repeat activities that will change your affections from trivial, temporary things to what is valuable and lasting, ultimately for God Himself. Would you pray with me? As I pray, I'm going to offer this prayer from the 15th century from a man named Jacob Merlo Horstius. Here's our prayer. Set my heart on fire with love for you, most loving Father. And then to do your will and to obey your commandments will not be grievous to me. For to him that loves, nothing is difficult, nothing is impossible, because love is stronger than death. Oh, may love fill and rule my heart. For then there will spring up and be cherished between you and me a likeness of character and union of will, so that I may choose and refuse as you do. May your will be done in me and by me forever. Amen.